My name's Reed Richards. Could you direct me to the science lab?
Hello and welcome back to Marvel by the Month, a weekly podcast about the history of Marvel Comics. My name is Brian Stratton.
And I'm Rob Milne.
And this week, we are taking a journey back in time to March 1962 for the third episode of our podcast. What will we be talking about today, Rob?
We will be slapping down our 12 cents and talk about the Fantastic Four, issue number 3.
Woohoo! Marvel Universe is still just a wee tiny little thing. No Hulk, no Iron Man, no Captain America, no Thor, no nothing, which is pretty cool. This is the third issue of Fantastic Four, and we're going to see what our quirky quartet is up to this month. But before we do that, let's just talk a little bit about if you are a kid and you are down at the drugstore and you are picking up Fantastic Four number 3. Well, first of all, it's probably January 1962. The newsstand dates for these early Marvel comics were about 2 months before the printed date. The printed date was actually to tell vendors when to take the issue off the stands, not when to put it out.
Oh,
so there you go.
I did not know that.
And there is a long tradition of magicians in Golden Age and Silver Age comics. Most of these guys, though, and they were almost all guys, were all heroes. So you had guys like the wizard Shazam, who gave the original Captain Marvel his powers, Mandrake the Magician, Dr. Fate, Dr. Occult, Zatara, and many, many others. So there's a long tradition of these superpowered magician characters. The well-known ones were published by other publishers, but Marvel, and in its previous incarnation as Timely Comics, also had several Golden Age magicians. And Rob, how many of these classic characters do you remember?
I was just looking at their names going, none.
Yeah.
None.
Not Dacor the Magician?
No.
Or about Magar the Mystic?
Monaco, Prince of Magic. Had to take somebody 3 seconds to come up with.
Yeah. Well, and the way that they were churning these things out.
It probably was.
It probably was 3 seconds, and they're done. What else did you, in your digging up, find that might have influenced this story?
It gives away more of the story. But less about magic. And
oh, yeah. At this point, should we just give spoiler alerts for every issue ever of Marvel Comics?
Yeah. If you have never read any Marvel comic, you're going to be so sad. There's an element of hypnotism in the story.
Mm-hmm.
And there, I recalled a Vincent Price movie specifically. And it turns out that movie was called Tales of Terror with Vincent Price, Basil Rathbone, and Peter Lorre were all in it. And there were a few stories, and one of them was about a hypnotist who is pretty evil and prolongs the death of someone indefinitely. Like, they're at the cusp of death.
Oh, man.
In agony because of this hypnotist. So people were, you know, afraid of that awesome power of the mind.
Sure.
And not to mention, in 1959, the Manchurian Candidate book had been written, and shortly after, in 1962, later in October, the movie with Frank Sinatra came out. It was a fairly frightening idea in the popular culture.
Right. This whole idea that someone who understood how the mind works could plant a suggestion in your brain that would remove your ability to perceive reality accurately or to be able to control yourself.
Yeah.
That's obviously what Lee and Kirby are playing off of, you know, and you'll see as we get into the story a little bit. That's what they're using for inspiration, is this whole idea of, you know, what if someone had these amazing abilities and used them for evil instead of good? Chapter 1, The Menace of the Miracle Man. So right away, we know that this guy's going to be the bad guy, but he doesn't start out that way exactly. In fact, he is the featured performer at a theatrical show that all four members of the Fantastic Four are in attendance at. He appears to be floating in the air with no wires. And while he's up there holding his Dracula cape up, he picks out the four celebrities in the audience. Mr. Fantastic, the Invisible Girl, the Thing, who's super not thrilled to have the spotlight on him, and the Human Torch. Miracle Man is talking about their amazing powers, but next to his power, they are nothing. And to prove that, he transforms himself into a 50-foot giant, into a cloud of gas and starts shooting lightning bolts all over the place, and then starts taunting the Fantastic Four, sneering at their puny powers and mocking their childish feats.
And guess who is offended by being mocked? The Thing.
Yes, still in his lumpy oatmeal phase.
Yes, with his boxer robe on.
Yes, it's awesome.
Well, I think it's a scarf and an overcoat, but it really reminds me of a boxer robe.
Yes.
So he immediately takes the bait, jumps up with a typical let me at him.
Yep.
And so, of course, the Miracle Man is waiting to, he's fallen straight into his trap. He puts up two giant logs and says, let's do a feat of test of strength, and has Ben Grimm break through the log, which takes quite a few hits.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the Miracle Man just says, oh, forgive me if I do not exhaust myself as you did. And then he takes one finger and slices through his giant log.
Yep, which does not amuse Ben, who completely loses his cool and throws a haymaker punch right at the Miracle Man's jaw. And the Miracle Man just stands there with his arms crossed and takes it and doesn't even flinch, which prompts the rest of the Fantastic Four to grab Ben, get him off the stage, and load him back into their air-powered Fantasticar and return back home.
And, of course, this is where the foreshadowing happens. Reed says, what if someone with such awesome power could turn to evil?
Yes.
What would we do? Could we even stop them?
Well, let's hope so, because we're on page 4 and we haven't, started the fight yet. So.
But good news.
Yeah, it's about to go down. So literally, his turn is foreshadowed as he's the Miracle Man is standing in his backstage room and casting a giant evil-looking shadow on the wall. And he's going to throw off his mask of respectability. But what is his plan going to be? He needs a bold, breathtaking feat to strike fear into the heart of the public. He looks out the window and just happens to see at the local theater, which is premiering a movie called The Monster from Mars. And there is a giant, awesome Jack Kirby monster statue right out front.
So he decides to bring this huge statue to life as his unconquerable slave. And so the groundwork is laid for the most amazing battle of all time.
Meanwhile, the Fantastic Four are getting home in their Fantasticar. Gives us a sweet cutaway diagram of the Fantastic Four's secret headquarters. And that brings us into Chapter 2.
The Monster Lives. So, no surprise, he brings the monster to life.
Whoa, you're kidding.
So as Johnny, Ben, and Reed are watching TV, we are interrupted by Sue popping in with a keen new costume.
It's the first glimpse of the Fantastic Four in their classic costumes. The blue jumpsuits with the black boots and gloves and the four logo on the chest. And she even makes one for Ben. who's not super pleased to be wearing it, even flat out says, I ain't gonna wear this fool outfit, in a proto Mr. T exclamation.
I feel like this is where Mr. T got his lines.
Absolutely. But yeah, so they're distracted from the new duds by Monster coming to life, and it is just going on a rampage, smashing police cars, and the cops have a bazooka handy. apparently. So they get ready to take a shot at it, and it vanishes right in front of their eyes. And Johnny Storm immediately jumps to the conclusion that it has to be the Miracle Man. Johnny doesn't know how he did it, but he did it.
And that's exactly what Reed feared. And of course, Ben is ready for this challenge. Power schmower. Just you let me get my hands on him again.
He pities the fool. So they head out. They separate the Fantasticar into its four sections. And they all start heading out individually to see if they can track down the monster and or the Miracle Man.
And at that very moment, barely a half mile away, we see a giant hand of the monster punching through a wall. And it's made apparent by some dialogue of the police that he seized $1 million worth of gems and is starting to get away. And that is when Reed sees him and sets up a trap by stretching himself between two buildings, this is one of the first times you see like how crazy Reed's powers can be.
Yes.
So he is stretching back and forth across a street through windows of a like six-story building to create a giant net for this giant monster.
Yep.
And he catches him, and it looks like he's going to stop that monster, but then the Miracle Man shows up basically in an alley and just clocks Reed in the face with a brick.
It's amazing. It's so good.
He has a lot of amazing powers, but apparently sometimes you just need to brick somebody in the face.
Yep. So he just takes it to the streets. So then we get to Reed in the police commissioner's office and just getting chewed out by the commissioner. Like, he just took a brick in the face trying to stop this thing, and the commissioner is just disappointed that he couldn't do better. But Reed says, never fear, his colleagues are still on the case. So the monster shows up at an army base, and he is trying to steal the army's new atomic tank. But as he is walking away with the tank, the Human Torch shows up, leaps out of the Fantastic Car, flames on, and starts flying flaming circles around the monster. And that brings us to Chapter 3, The Flame That Died.
So from far away, Sue and I just saw the thing in his costume again.
And so,
The thing wearing his costume in their pieces of the Fantastic Car see Johnny. So they head over to help him, and they land. And immediately, that's when Ben rips his dumb helmet off and rips his shirt off and says, as for me, I'm getting out of this monkey suit so I can move.
I love that he wastes no time just stripping down and getting to work.
Bare-chested time.
Yep. Meanwhile, the torch flies right into the hand of the monster and lets him grab him. This is exactly what Johnny wanted, actually, because he just turns up his flame and burns the monster to cinders. But as he does, the torch is flying around surveying the situation, realizes the monster was nothing but wood and plaster. How did the Miracle Man make him move? The army, apparently, I guess the Fantastic Four is still kind of new on the scene. They haven't gotten a memo about them. They just start shooting at the torch. That doesn't stop him, but the Miracle Man has some chemical foam that he sprays up and douses the torch's flame, sends him crashing to the earth, and that brings the thing into the fight.
So now, essentially, the Miracle Man has defeated two of four.
Mm-hmm.
The thing steps up, and he's, of course, ready. He really wants to settle this score, especially being humiliated with this log earlier. So as he's about to attack the Miracle Man, he says, fool, all I need to do is gesture. And then the ground opens up, and the thing sinks into it. So this is like asphalt. And so now all three of the men of the Fantastic Four have been defeated.
And the Miracle Man is just gloating over them in what is really just a really sinister looking panel. He's just like, it's a purple background. He's colored a magenta. His eyes and teeth are bright white, and he just has this really demonic appearance. And this is something I meant to mention earlier, is like one of the things that really sells the Miracle Man as a menace is the color work that's done in here. This is all done by a guy named Stan Goldberg.
Yeah.
And their colorists were generally not credited in early Marvel comics, but this is his palette at work. And it really, I think it's used to really great effect in places like this, where it's like, he's a legit scary looking dude. Like, if I was reading this and I was, 7 years old, like, that might be something that would stick with me for a little while.
It's a pretty big, clue that he's evil. And Stan also, Goldberg, created the color palettes for and the costumes. So
yes, that's
right. He defined these for a number of the early Marvel comics, including Spider-Man.
Yeah. Yep. Anyway, so then all three of the Fantastic Four dudes are out, so it's up to Sue Storm. She turns invisible and jumps in the back of the truck. And she is just going to follow the Miracle Man wherever he happens to be going. And now we are on Chapter 4 in the Shadow of Defeat. The Fantastic Dudes are back at their place. Johnny has showered off the chemical foam. Ben got a new shirt somewhere. yeah. And
Reed's smoking a pipe
because that's how he does his best thinking. This is an excuse for an interlude of about a page where they retell their origin story again for, I believe, the third time in three issues. So,
yep.
But we're going to let it go because, again, we're still establishing these characters. This is only the third time that they have appeared on newsstands. So very possible that there are some people reading this who had not seen the first two. You know, Reed does his usual thing where he's trying to convince Ben that, yeah, even though you turned into a Rocky freak, it's still, you know, a great thing that we have these powers because we can do such great things for the world. And Johnny uses this as an excuse to just start taunting Ben and how ugly he is. The two of them start scrapping. The torch winds up taken off because he's just had enough of Ben's stuff. And Reed gets angry at Ben and things are just not looking great for the boys.
And so they've, you know, had their fight. Johnny storms off. Ben's put a hole in the wall. He didn't tear off his new shirt, which was good. But we cut to see what Sue's up to. She's stowed away on this truck with the atomic tank. So she's hiding invisible and watching as the Miracle Man tries to hide the tank in a junkyard. But the old junkyard dog, that he catches her scent, and the Miracle Man puts two and two together and figures out that it must be her. So he commands her to become visible, and she does.
And then he orders her to use her flare pistol to summon the Fantastic Four to his lair, where he plans to finish them off once and for all. And so one by one, all three of the remaining Fantastic Four, they descend on the Miracle Man's lair, where he is holding a giant key and threatening them. But wait, it's not a giant key. He can make it change into a machine gun with the power of his mind. He starts shooting at Reed, who just turns into a ball and bounces around and dodging bullets, because apparently a ball is a very hard thing to hit with a machine gun, so which I was not aware of. I'm not a gun guy, so, you know.
It's like a guy who can turn himself to paper thin.
Right.
But he sort of makes it, yeah, whatever.
Sure, okay.
It looks really neat.
Yep. And then Ben just steps in front of the bullets and just lets them all bounce off of him.
Kind of moshes in there.
He does. He's like a real, like, minor threat move. So then Miracle Man grabs Sue by the arm, jumps in the atomic tank, and tries to make his escape.
And so they had flown there, Reed and Ben, but apparently at some point between them landing and this whole key and gun incident, the Miracle Man had cut the drive cable on the copter.
Sure.
So Johnny just noticed and tells them. So they need to jump into a Keen Jalopy.
Yeah.
And it's an old antique racing car and start after the tank.
And as they are tearing after the Miracle Man's tank, he starts shooting back at them, blows off one of their wheels. But no problem, because Reed just jumps out of the car and turns himself into a spare wheel. Johnny and Ben continue driving toward... Johnny gets close enough that he's able to jump out of the car, flame on, and head after the tank, and explodes a giant blazing flash in front of the tank, which temporarily blinds the Miracle Man.
So they've captured the Miracle Man. He's blind. He's worried about his eyes. Ben is now ready. Again, Ben with no top because he's already been in a fight.
Yep.
Is ready to pulverize him and is getting ready to swing. Reed holds him back and says his power is gone. And we don't know why or how that is.
Mm-hmm.
And
because we are not the world's smartest man.
Right. And he'll just, and he does what any, you know, Sherlock Holmes or other smart men do. They tell you, they'll explain later.
Yep.
He orders the Miracle Man to release the control over Sue and then proceeds to tell everyone what is going on. And you, having listened to this, will know that it might have something to do with hypnotism.
Mm. That's exactly what it was. He is no Miracle Man, says Reed. He has no magic powers. He's merely a clever hypnotist, a master of mass illusion. The monster never moved. He just hypnotized everyone into thinking it did. He didn't really split the log on stage with his finger. He just made everyone think he did. Reed knows all this because a true Miracle Man wouldn't have needed to steal any jewels. He would have just conjured up wealth. He wouldn't have needed to flee. He could have just disappeared or made them disappear. But because of the torch's blinding flash, the Miracle Man's power is now gone. And that's it. It's all wrapped up neat and tidy. And everything's cool now, right?
Not exactly.
Oh, no. What?
More familial infighting.
Oh, no. Ben, these guys.
Ben gets mad that that all of the credit is being or given to Johnny. Sue says, please stop arguing, which is what she does so far every issue.
Yep.
And then Johnny, being a hothead also, pun intended, decides to fly off. So, and he is apparently not coming back. He's done.
He's done.
And done in a way that Reed is afraid because it may turn against them.
Reed's really worried about people turning against them generally. Like, that's a recurring fear.
He meets anyone.
Yeah.
And is
like,
well,
what if he turns against us? But, you know, to Reed's credit, he's got a pretty good track record thus far.
This does set us up with something that's really unique, I think, to the Marvel Universe and specifically this group of heroes. We've seen a lot of Johnny's cool powers in this issue, but now he may become a threat or a villain.
Yep.
And that seems totally plausible at this point. There's no reason why we think he's probably a hero and it's going to be okay, but we really don't know in this universe what is going to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've got Ben Grimm, who's supposedly a hero and doesn't act like it most of the time. Like, it's not beyond the realm of possibility that maybe Johnny's going to go down the same path. So, yeah. So we're left with that cliffhanger, as well as the final caption, which tells us that next issue, the Torch will strike back. And don't be surprised to see another great character whom you demanded we bring back, all in the next wonderful issue. So a couple good cliffhangers there from Stan, making sure that we all line up for Fantastic Four number 4. And then Kirby gives us a Human Torch pinup. To round out the book to an even 24 pages, and we're done. Let's talk a little bit about some of the stuff that we thought held up pretty well from this issue. So this is, 1962, so this is 57 years old, so this is showing its age a little bit, but some stuff actually still feels really fresh.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I thought was pretty awesome is that Sue Storm actually gets to do something in this issue. She won't get to do a lot of stuff, spoiler alert, in a lot of upcoming issues. But, that's just a reflection of the time more than anything else. But the fact that she actually had a chance to do something heroic and, take a risk and try to follow the Miracle Man and get to the bottom of things when her three male companions all struck out. I think it's great. She wasn't just, sitting around the headquarters fretting and waiting for them to come home. So,
sewing new uniforms. Yeah.
Sewing new uniforms. It's baby steps. It's baby steps. But at least she got to do something.
Yeah. And I think you've noted, we talked about this, but there are a few places where we see Reed's power.
Yeah.
And it's like a very, it's far-fetched, but it's also cartoony.
Yeah.
And at the same time, it somehow seems like it's science.
Right.
Especially as a kid, reading these things, it's, but seeing his, the different ways he uses his power, you see him stretch between the building, you see him turn himself into a ball, and then you see him turn himself into a tire.
I swear to God, the spare tire bit is just, it's legit funny. It's really, really funny. And it's played for laughs too. That whole chase scene is actually really ridiculous. It feels like a Marx Brothers routine.
Yeah. And you can see his head on there and he's like, I can't hold this up for very long.
And Johnny's having a great time and Ben's pissed off. And it's just
like awesome. Johnny could fly after them, but he wants to ride on the side of this car.
Oh, it's so just... good. Yeah. So like, I thought that aged really well. And also, you know, just the glimpses we get of the Fantastic Four, you know, being real people in real world situations, you know, not just the interpersonal stresses that they have to deal with, but you know, when the issue starts out, they're enjoying a night out. They're all four at a theater, and just, you know, doing a very non-superheroic thing. They're just there to see a show, you know, and Ben doesn't want to be noticed, but how can he not be noticed?
Right. So, and even those touches of like, you know, Johnny in a towel coming out of the shower after he got that stuff on him, or and Reed smoking his pipe.
Yep.
Or Ben putting a hole in the wall. those things are or watching TV. There's just all of these elements that are normal, semi-mundane.
Yes.
And it helps to really sell them as relatable.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that's not to say though that everything from this issue holds up really well. There's only a couple of things. I think generally speaking, this is a pretty fun issue, but the biggest thing that doesn't hold up well is Miracle Man himself. Like as a villain, he's not super interesting. You kind of get the feeling that Stan and Jack sort of knew this, you know, by the time they were done with him, because he does not reappear for a long, long time. Lee and Kirby never touch the character again. And this is, you know, as you'll see in later episodes of this, they recycle everything. There's some pretty C-list villains who get several appearances in early Marvel Comics because there just, you know, wasn't a lot to work with at the time. But Miracle Man does not show up again until the late 70s in a pretty forgettable story. Then he shows up again, I think, in the mid 80s. And he gets killed by another supervillain, and that's it. Like, that's pretty much it for the Miracle Man. So, you know, not a great character, but, you know, at the same time, I think they sort of work around a less than stellar villain by having some really good interpersonal antagonism between the members of the team. So with friends like these, who needs villains? Hey!
And this is the third issue. The first two issues have the Mole Man and the Skrulls.
Yeah.
If you know anything about the Marvel Universe, spoiler alert, they show up again and again. And until this very day, and will probably in the future.
Yep. They will. They totally will. What, anything that kind of jumped out at you that maybe, you know, was a swing and a miss?
The thing's costume.
Yeah.
And I think that, again, Kirby never meant for him to have a costume.
No, I don't think so either.
I would like to think that there was some, like,
But Kirby's it's called a uniform, Jack. Everyone's got to wear one. It's right. How you know they're all on the same team.
And Jack had, you know, done some time in the service. He was in Normandy.
Yes.
Yeah. So he might have said, you know what? We're going to just let him be bare-chested.
Yeah.
Rock man.
Yep.
Not to mention the orange and the blue are really nice complementary color.
But yeah, overall, I think, you know, there's a couple quibbles with what is, you know, a pretty sharp issue overall. So this brings us to, if you have to choose one panel that you will remember the story by, or this month of Marvel Comics, what jumps out at you is something that stood out to you?
For me, it's kind of the most boring thing, but it was that cutaway of the Baxter Building. I I love those things. When I was reading comics early on, just seeing like their map room and the somehow they have a missile in the top of a high rise that they can get in. And so all of like, so the possibilities of just seeing that were, those are the things where my imagination runs wild. And that's something I can revisit a lot.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think the thing that's really cool about those, especially when you're looking at them as a kid, is that just by looking at the layout of the base, you kind of tell your own story about, like, in between issues, this is what they do, or, you know, these are the things that they could do going forward, or, you know, it just hints at all these possibilities. And it's a cool thing, especially for a kid. I totally remember drawing stuff like this, like underground bases and like having different rooms and like, here's where the vehicles are and things like that. So,
even though we may never need to refer to it again.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. But they tell you, hang on to it. Save it for reference. That's great.
And you?
Mine, it's really a two-way tie. And they're both Reed Richards panels. The first is on page 9 and panel 7, Reed Richards taking a brick to the face. It's just, there's something about, like, he's just gone to these extraordinary lengths, literally, to capture this fantastical creature. And it's just so superhero-y. And then, like, the villain of the Beast just shows up and hucks a brick at him. That's that. It's great. The other is what we just talked about, where toward the end of the story on page 21, Reed Richards turning into a spare tire to replace the one that the Miracle Man shot out from under them. It's silly, and it's fun, and I just love it. Like, there's a lot of drama in this. There's also a lot of humor in it, I think it strikes a really nice balance. So Rob, on a scale of 1 to 4 Fantasticar segments, how marvelous would you say this month was?
I would say this one was probably only 2.
Mm, mm-hmm.
But we can use the front and the back. They're a little bigger. just because it's, you know, forgettable villain.
Mm-hmm.
There's just, compared to how your imagination runs wild with the Skrulls and the Mole Man and the monsters that he brings, this was just seemed like we were sort of moving back down to a mid-tempo song in our set list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a little bit of a palate cleanser. Yeah. I think I'm going to be slightly more generous and give it I'll give it the 2 small segments and 1 of the big segments for a total of 3 Fantasticar segments. Reasons for that would be the crazy stuff that Reed gets up to in it, and the first appearance of the Fantastic Four costumes.
And the Fantasticar itself.
And the Fantasticar.
Our rating system.
Yep, exactly. And I think, you know, just the cliffhanger it ends with, where, you know, you have the team basically breaking up, and you're not quite sure what's going to happen. It's a pretty good cliffhanger. It was certainly unlike other comics that were on the stands at this time. This is definitely a bolder move than DC was doing with Justice League at this point. So, I think you're absolutely right. Miracle Man is a totally forgettable villain, but I think he's the least important part of the whole issue. I think it hangs together pretty well. Like, I remember not liking this issue. I remember it not standing out in my mind. And I remember when I started, I was like, oh, it's this one. But by the end of it, I sort of like, okay, actually, there's a lot more good stuff here. So maybe there's something to be said for coming with low expectations. I don't know.
I should say part of what gives me my rating is the holes in the story.
Yeah.
So, there are often holes in these early stories. But when I get to the end of the story and we realize that it's all about hypnotism, and I don't know how hypnotism punched a hole in the wall to get the $1 million worth of gems.
Or steal the atomic tank.
Right. There are a few places where I just, that also fell apart for me. Although that cliffhanger on the end could almost convince me to give three, not the front segment,
yeah, but
three segments of the car.
Well, cool. Well, thanks for sticking around and listening to our third episode of the podcast. We're super looking forward to the fourth one because it is also the introduction of one of my favorite Marvel characters in the modern Marvel Age of Comics. And we'll just leave that as a cliffhanger. But yeah, I think you're excited to talk it as well.
Yes.
Yeah. Excellent. In the meantime, definitely check us out on the internet. We have social medias. You can get us on Instagram at Marvel by the Month, all one word. On Twitter, we are at Marvel BTM because Marvel by the Month was too long for Twitter. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/Marvel by the Month, and on the web in general, marvelbythemonth.com. So thanks again very much for listening. I've been Brian Stratton.
And I have been Ron Miller.
And we will see you next week or next month.